really is meaningful when you can go to a place where you know what it's going to be like, and you can just kind of forget about all the things that normally bother you when you go to somewhere new, and just kind of be yourself. And I think that that's one thing that places like Chick-fil-A or White Castle, depending on which White Castle you go to, really inspire. it lets you kind of relax a little bit.
The United States is a fast food nation. After all, it was our third president, Thomas Jefferson, who brought French fries to America. Thanks, Tom. Today on the podcast, we're going to take a journey through the heart of America's fast food kingdom with the man who wrote the book on it. Hey there, welcome to My Pleasure, the unofficial Chick-fil-A podcast. I'm your host, Allison Storm. I'm joined by Jim Mann. Okay, Jim, trivia question here. If you had to credit fast food as we know it today to one restaurant chain, which one would you choose?
Well, I would like to say Chick-fil-A, but McDonald's has been a bigger part of my life. I remember as a child going to the first McDonald's that came to Baltimore, and it was a big deal. It was 25-cent hamburgers, and if we splurged 35 cents for the cheeseburger, it was like heaven.
So did you go to like the grand opening?
I don't remember. It was a blur. I was just so excited. I mean, it was a grand opening to me. It could have been open for months, but, you know.
Okay. Well, that's a good guess. I think most people would say McDonald's. But in fact, fast food as we know it did not start with McDonald's. It actually started with White Castle. And that is a fact, I know, that I learned reading Drive Through Dreams by Adam Chandler. This guy knows his stuff when it comes to fast food. And I am so excited to have him as a guest on the show today. Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
Okay, so Adam, I got to know, your work has appeared in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Time, Esquire, and more. You've covered business, culture, politics, foreign affairs. So please tell us how you decided to write about the complex history and influence of fast food in America.
Well, that's a great question. I'm not sure how I stumbled into it myself. I think part of it was that I was writing a lot about news and serious topics, but every time I wrote about fast food, I would just get this groundswell of reaction. I would get a lot of notes, a lot of emails, a lot of stories. And I realized, you know, there's something there. And I know this podcast is part of that story too. You know, your history with talking about Chick-fil-A and then seeing huge reactions come up. It's really this universal thing that everyone has familiarity with. And that's really meaningful.
How did your research process for this book happen?
It would be generous to call it a research process. It was more driving across country, talking to people in fast food restaurants, doing a lot of reading and a lot of eating. And so it wasn't exactly methodical, more so than just kind of guided by the road and my gut.
Your gut as in being hungry?
Yes, as in being hungry and you know, hungry for knowledge and often hungry for things like waffle fries.
So it's safe to say that America was built on fast food, right?
I think it's safe to say the last 100 years looks a lot different because of fast food and in a lot of interesting ways.
So why do you believe we owe a lot of our fast food gratitude to White Castle?
White Castle really is the first chain that kind of came up and created this idea of let's go to a place where everything kind of looks the same, feels the same. It creates an expectation. And that was important 100 years ago because people weren't sure what they were eating whenever they went out to restaurants. And they didn't go out to restaurants that often. But in general, you could walk into a shop and not know the cleanliness standards, the menu. The expectation was not set, but what White Castle did was create this restaurant that looked the same everywhere you went and had the same menu and had the same suppliers. And so you knew exactly what you were going to get. And there's a lot of power in that. That's something that I think we kind of take for granted today. We may want something that's unique every single time, but there's something really comforting about going somewhere and knowing what it's going to cost, what it's going to taste like, and what the experience is going to be like. And White Castle kind of started that.
I mean, I've heard of White Castle, and I just assume, oh, it's a West Coast thing. And then I found out it's really an East Coast thing. And I grew up on the East Coast, and I've never really moved away from here, but I don't think I've ever even had a White Castle. But isn't that like similar to Crystal's?
Yeah, exactly. What's fascinating about White Castle's story is that it created all of these imitators because it was so popular. And the biggest one is Crystal. You know, Crystal's, I think, 75 years old. It came up just a few years after White Castle started. And they both kind of have this Crystal as in clear. They want to make the image of the restaurant to be something that is clean, where you go and you feel safe eating there. And again, this was a big problem 100 years ago, and a little bit less so now, but White Castle was meant to convey cleanliness, and that's a big part of the equation. So all of these knockoff chains emerged as a result of White Castle's success, and only a few of them exist. There's one called White Manna, and there are two of them in New Jersey. There was White Tower, Blue Tower, Red Castle. You can, any variation you can think of was copied somewhere out there in the world.
That's so interesting. Now, you share a lot of fascinating stories of fast food founders in your book, and I'm curious to know who your favorite is and why.
It's really hard to narrow it down. You know, I think Colonel Sanders has this amazing story of just someone who tried and failed over and over again in his life. He wasn't successful until he was in his late 60s, and then he became the second most famous person in the world. And that's really a credit to his kind of gumption, his fortitude, and his energy to create a business that he was passionate about. And he was, you know, tinkering in a kitchen in southeastern Kentucky in a gas station for 30 years, trying to perfect the chicken recipe that ultimately became world famous. And so, you know, with no disrespect to Chick-fil-A, of course, I do think he paved the way for a lot of, you know, chicken to become this iconic American dish in a way that it wasn't before.
Yeah, I couldn't believe, I think you said he, like at age 5, was tasked with like caring for his younger siblings. You know, there was a lot of amazing things about his life that I didn't know about, but I think he has kind of become this person that we look to as we get older for like the success story of like, there's still good things to come.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, he shares a lot of the features of fast food founders. I mean, obviously, Stewart Cathy walking around his neighborhood selling ice down Coca-Colas, you know, during the Great Depression is another example of someone who kind of came from humble beginnings and really worked his way up. And a lot of the fast food founders share that characteristic, that life story of just working really hard and putting everything they have into their vision and turning it into something pretty incredible.
Yeah, Truett Cathy. What did you call it in your book? Like fries to riches story or something like that. It was really cute how you wrote it, but he didn't make it into the book, but like you said, I do feel like he kind of fits that mold of somebody who came from very little. Did you do much research on Truett, or, you know, what was your thought as you're working on the book about him?
It's a great story in part because Chick-fil-A is obviously so beloved. If you look at all these consumer perception reports that come out every year, and I'm very deep into this kind of data and looking at satisfaction surveys, Chick-fil-A always comes up number one. And part of it is because it's maintained this status as a chain that stays family owned, privately held, and kind of committed to a level of service and operational excellence that a lot of other chains don't really manage to keep up. I mean, McDonald's is huge, but everyone knows there's the good McDonald's, and then there's the one like on the other side of town that you don't really like going to because the ice cream machine's always broken. You know, those kinds of features of the fast food world. And so, looking at Chick-fil-A as a standard of what happens when a chain really does it right all the time. And I grew up in Texas, which didn't have a lot of Chick-fil-A growing up, but Whataburger is a regional privately held chain that we, you know, hold up as this standard of excellence. And, you know, on the West Coast, there's In-N-Out Burger, which is another version of that same idea. So it kind of fits into this regional ideal. And I think that that's one of the things that makes Chick-fil-A unique. It's really held fast to those ideas, even as it's grown much bigger than it did, you know, from its early years.
Yeah. And since we are the unofficial Chick-fil-A podcast, I'm going to push a little bit more on the Chick-fil-A aspect. But I, you know, I love the food. I mean, Chick-fil-A's got great food, but the reason why I really go there is, like you were saying earlier, is that I know they're like happy to see me, which I need that in my life. Because, you know, Allison's not usually happy to see me, but
get on with it, Jim. Get on with it.
But, you know, I'll go to, I don't want to mention any names, but McDonald's, I'll go there, and it has nothing to do with McDonald's themselves, but I mean, people act like I'm interrupting their life sometimes. Not always. Some people are just wonderful, but for the most part, they're like, I've had times when people wouldn't even look at me. They're looking the other way and they're just handing food out the window. I'm like, okay, that's, you know, this food could be amazing, but I'm not going to come back, you know, if you don't even care that I'm here. But Chick-fil-A, they're like, oh my gosh, you're back kind of feel. And, you know, they're looking in the eyes. And how come other fast food places don't pick up on that for some reason?
Right. It really speaks to the company ethos. It really speaks to what the mission of the company is. And I have to tell you the story. I got to go to the new Chick-fil-A in New York City, the first one they opened back in 2015 before it opened. And, you know, this is a three-story behemoth in the middle of New York that, by the way, remains closed on Sunday, even though I can't imagine how much that must cost in real estate. And what was really fascinating about this experience was they flew up, you know, some of their best and brightest employees to help train the new staff. And these were folks from all over the country who, you know, got to experience living in New York for a couple of weeks, training a staff to open a store so that everything would be perfect. You know, it was down in the basement and they're going through 30,000 lemons a day for the lemonade. It's really just incredible, incredible stuff. And the line is always out the door and you're always served really quickly. And it really speaks to how seriously they take the operations of it. And that is hard to do. And a lot of places don't do it quite the same because they're just not invested in the same way.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned being from Texas and how there weren't that many Chick-fil-A's there when you were growing up. We just learned, Adam, you may not know this, that Texas actually has the most Chick-fil-A's of any state. They have 16% of all Chick-fil-A's are in Texas.
Wow. I wish I had that in high school. That would have been amazing. Well, everything's bigger in Texas, so I guess we have to hold the most Chick-fil-A crown too. But that sounds about right. That makes sense, because every time I go home now to visit family, there are tons of them everywhere. And again, very, very popular there too.
Yeah. Now you, in your book, talk about some of the incredible fans various fast food brands have. Help me remember the story of the woman who wanted to be buried in the urn that looked like her favorite restaurant. What was it? Do you remember what chain it was? I can't recall.
That was White Castle.
Okay.
It's one of those stories that kind of speaks to the importance of these places that, you know, we go to and we may not think twice about, but really play an important role in our lives. This was a woman in New Jersey who she and her sister were going through a health crisis, and what they would do is, to bond, they would sneak out of the hospital and they would go to White Castle and they'd have burgers and they just kind of forget about their worries for a little while. And so when the sister passed, she decided to get an urn shaped by a 3D printer in the image of a White Castle. And it was something that kind of spoke to how important these little moments were in their lives, where they could go and just kind of forget about their worries and be sisters in a very innocent way. And I always thought that was such a beautiful story. So I included it in the book, in part because this is something I think that really stands out about fast food. We kind of look at it as ubiquitous, and it's there in the landscape and it doesn't really stand out. And the experiences are often uniform and the same everywhere you go. And those are often looked as bad things, depending on who you talk to. But it really is meaningful when you can go to a place where you know what it's going to be like, and you can just kind of forget about all the things that normally bother you when you go to somewhere new and just kind of be yourself. And I think that that's one thing that places like Chick-fil-A or White Castle, depending on which White Castle you go to, really inspire. It lets you kind of relax a little bit. And, you know, there's not a lot of hierarchy there. There's no wait staff. There's no dress code. You can just kind of do whatever you want, more or less. And that's special.
Mm-hmm. In your research, did you have a feeling of like which brand has the most raving fans?
It's a really good question. I think Taco Bell has the most raving fans, in part because Taco Bell has such a bad reputation among people who don't like it, that the people who do love it are extra enthusiastic about it. But that doesn't really translate into, I think, sales or public perception the way that the regional chains like In-N-Out and Whataburger and Chick-fil-A necessarily do. I think that their fan base kind of shows up in a way that Taco Bell fans, they like to wave the flag of the brand, but maybe not always show up in the same way. So it's tough to say. I do think that Taco Bell fans do take it to another level, though.
Is there a Taco Bell fan podcast?
That's a good question. You know, there's a literary magazine called Taco Bell Quarterly where people write poems and essays and stories about Taco Bell. So, I really think that that's about as hardcore as it gets. But yeah, no, I don't think there's a Taco Bell. There must be somewhere, but I don't know about it.
If there is, we need to find them, Jim, and have the hosts on as guests on our podcast.
Definitely.
At least arm wrestle.
Definitely.
Right. We can go up against them for some kind of, you know, fast food crown victory championship.
Yeah, you work on that one. I haven't been to Taco Bell since college, and I went there just because it was so dirt cheap. But and it's been a few years.
Yeah, it's I love it. I have to say, I think I just have fond memories of sneaking out of high school sometimes, not often, but occasionally to, you know, grab some tacos with my friends and spend $2 or $3 and be done with it. But yeah, I really, I do think it's one of those places that stands out in your memory just because it's like being in your friend's kitchen, kind of, you know, you can kind of create whatever you want and no one really judges you. And a lot of times it's something that has several, you know, pumps of warm nacho cheese. And it's, you know, it's hard not to feel like you are pulling one over on everyone who told you to eat properly when you were a kid, when you go there. So I think there's something fun and devious about it too.
Okay. But Adam, you did not name your dog Taco Bell.
I did name my dog Arby. It's true. My wife and I were out on a road trip, and we went to this little town in Connecticut that was having kind of an adoption fair / summer festival. And we saw this little dog, and he was up for adoption. He was a rescue, and we're trying to figure out his name because we were obsessed with him. And we decided he looked like a little hunk of roast beef and we should name him Arby. And that's exactly what we did. So now you may have heard him in the last 15 minutes or so barking in the background because he doesn't like the mailman. And that's little Arby, not so little anymore. But, you know, it's, I think the name really fits his personality. He's kind of obsessed with food, and he's a little rambunctious, and he's a little bit of a chonk, and that's what we like about him.
Oh, that's so hilarious. Cute.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Cute. Yeah. Well, on that note, it's time to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're quizzing someone who wrote the book on fast food about fast food.
You guys, we got some 5-star reviews. Check these out. Thompson Fam writes, love this podcast and the heart that is behind it. Beck Fam 8 wrote, just discovered this podcast and love it. My daughter has worked at CFA for 7 years. CFA has been life-changing for her. These stories on your podcast are amazing. Keep sharing the good news. And JD Dude wrote, I love Allison and Jim so much. Great communication, and you can see their hearts in every episode. Aw, thanks, guys. We really do love reading your feedback, so don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and we may just share yours on an upcoming episode.
Welcome back. We've been chatting with Adam Chandler, author of Drive Through Dreams. Adam, what is one of your earliest fast food memories?
Oh, wow. You know, I have to say, it's got to be the birthday party at McDonald's. That was such a iconic part of childhood for me, was going with 10 or 12 friends to the McDonald's for a friend's birthday party. And it was a very cheap and low key way to have, way too many nuggets and then run around like crazy in the play place. And so that's probably my earliest memory of it. That and maybe stealing the fries out of my sister's bag at Burger King and her getting very upset with me.
Aw. Do kids have birthday parties at McDonald's? I was just asking my husband about this because birthday parties are so expensive now. I'm like, what happened to the days when we just went to McDonald's?
Absolutely. They still do. They still do. There are fewer playgrounds than there used to be, but if you go to a McDonald's in a lot of different places, usually outside of cities, you will see a birthday party there. It's just Saturday afternoon. Count on it.
All right. Okay. I guess I just don't go there enough anymore. But also in your book, you talk about some of the menu flops over the years, which is kind of hilarious to read about. And at Chick-fil-A, there have been, several menu items that for one reason or another were removed from the menu, like the bagel or the coleslaw or cheesecake, stuff like that. Is there anything you wish that you could have tried before it was removed from the menu that maybe like you learned about when writing the book, or anything that you miss that was removed from a fast food menu that you used to order?
Well, Taco Bell had a Mexican pizza, which is now coming back. After much outcry, there were change.org petitions signed that tens of thousands of people were rallying to have it come back. You know, McDonald's used to have these versions of like Awesome Blossoms. They were onion ring kind of burgers, and they were, from what I've read, incredibly popular with a very small vegetarian focused part of the population. And they just didn't sell well enough to stay on the menu. So that's one thing I think I'd like to try, just because I think it's interesting to think of a fried onion patty as a way to go when you go out to have a fast food burger. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think of other really bizarre things that have existed out there that I think I would have liked to have tried. It's tough because I feel like I get to try so many limited time offerings. Mm-hmm. I never did try the Chick-fil-A bagel, although I heard it was pretty good.
You didn't miss much.
I didn't miss much. Okay, good. That makes me feel better then. A lot of times it's the stranger things that kind of pop up and are only around for a minute, and you can tell it's not really about the food. Like the waffle taco at Taco Bell was not really what was meant to be a big part of their breakfast strategy, but it captivated the imagination. So people would show up and say, "I want a waffle taco," and then realize everything else in the breakfast menu is better. It's sort of like the, what I really love is the egg white grill at Chick-fil-A as a breakfast sandwich. Mm. That usually when I have a breakfast sandwich from any fast food place, I need to go back to sleep. I'm so like, it's heavy and I'm tired. Mm. And the egg white grill is really the perfect thing that can power me through the day. And I don't get enough of that, mostly because I tend not to eat breakfast outside the house. But that's one thing that I wish I tried more of, and I hope it stays on the menu forever.
I used to have that every morning at the radio station. Remember, Allison?
Yes, I do. That was your go-to. They had it. They knew it, right? When you pulled up, they handed you your bag.
If I want to change my order, they already said, egg white grill? Okay, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah,
it's way better than the bagel, so don't worry about that.
Okay, good.
But I have to imagine you got pretty familiar with fast food menus after all of your research. So I thought it would be fun to put Adam, the fast food expert, up against Jim, the fast food enthusiast, in a game I call name that number one. So I'm going to describe a number one, and you have to name the fast food joint where it's from. You guys have any questions?
Oh, wow. Okay. No. I'm ready.
All right. Winner gets a Chick-fil-A milkshake on me.
All right.
All right. First one. Three crunchy tacos supreme.
That's Taco Bell.
Oh, yes. You got it in.
What? Oh, it's whoever goes first?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I just went for it.
Wow. I'm too polite. Let me get my elbows up.
Sorry, I'm it's the New Yorker in me, I guess. Oh, that's Taco Bell.
I heard a horn blowing.
Okay, number two, the classic buttery Jack combo.
Jack in the box.
Jack in the box. Yep.
Oh, Jim got that one in.
Good one.
Okay, number three, quarter pound bacon cheese grill burger.
Dairy Queen?
Yes! Good job.
Awesome. Go there.
How did you know?
They wrote a book.
I think because they call their stores that serve food and not just Blizzard's Grill and Chills, is that like it came up when you said the grill.
Ah, good job.
That's my guess.
Okay. All right.
He's winning.
You still have a chance, Jim. All right, here we go. Two-piece drum and thigh combo.
KFC.
Nice.
Nice job.
Thank you. Chicken.
Oh. Man. This is the last one. And you guys are tied 2-2.
Pressure is on.
Oh, I'm sitting down.
Okay, here we go. The original slider.
Holy Castle.
Yes! Adam got it for the win.
That's almost unfair because he's never gotten to have a lot of White Castle. Right. So,
it's like he wrote the book or something.
That's true. Jim, I came up with these questions before I heard that you had never been to White Castle, so I apologize.
I'm bitter. I'm pretty bitter.
I did not think it would be fair to add a Chick-fil-A one in there, so.
I would have muscled my way in there.
You would have. That's so awesome. So is there going to be like a part two, or what's your next book going to be about, Adam?
Well, it's a good question. You know, I'm still having fun talking a lot about fast food. I've gotten to do some work with the History Channel on their series, The Food That Built America, where we talk a lot about the fast food stories and founders and kind of the drama behind these really big chains that have come up into, you know, the American consciousness. So that's one thing I've been working a lot on. I think I should probably write a book about health food just because I need to like correct myself after all these years. So maybe that's what I'll end up doing next. But, you know, it's been a lot of fun doing it, and I have some ideas, but I'm not sure I'm ready to go back out there yet with an idea until I think health food is something better than health food comes along.
Well, if you need any raving fans for an interview, keep us in mind.
I would be honored. Thank you.
And where can people connect with you?
Sure. Well, I'm all over social media, for better and for worse. My handle across social media is All My Chandler, which is a reference to all my children. They have a character named Adam Chandler for 40 years before it went off the air. And so it's always been fun to be on the internet with a name that soap opera fans recognize as a very evil character. So that's usually where I am dropping a lot of hot takes about fast food. And otherwise, you know, adamchandler.com is where I keep my writing going. I freelance for a lot of different places and do a lot of podcasts and TV whenever, you know, people are kind enough to invite me. So I try to stay out there and social, even though it's harder these days as usual.
I have recently been thinking about Susan Lucci and her character Erica Kane on that show, and I was trying to remember Adam Chandler's twin brother's name.
Stuart,
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But I bet it was my subconscious because I was thinking about your, you know, reading your book and seeing your name, but I was wondering, why am I thinking about all my children?
That's it. That's the answer.
It was totally
yeah.
It. That's That's so weird. The brain is so fascinating.
It really is. It really is. It's funny because, you know, there are a lot of times where I'll hand over my ID at the airport when I'm going through security or a credit card to a cashier, and they'll see the name. They'll kind of like, they'll stop for a minute. I'm like, why do I know that name? And then it conjure up the image of an evil soap opera character who, you know, had five wives and nine children and seven of them, you know, he conspired against. It's just all kinds of craziness. So it's always funny when that moment of recognition happens, because this is such a strange character in a very specific niche of American pop culture.
Jim, do you have any idea what we're talking about?
Absolutely not. I just think of Chandler. Chandler from Friends.
I've never watched it. So I really don't have any idea what the story is, but I really, it's fun to live vicariously through soap opera fans.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure, obviously. And I'm so delighted that you reached out, and I love keeping up with this. So I will continue to do that.
Awesome. Well, if you enjoyed today's show, please do what a Chick-fil-A team member would do. Politely pass this goodness on to a friend. Take a screenshot, share it on social media, and help us spread the word. Also, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, can you do me a favor? Pick up your phone, hit those 5 stars, and leave a review. We love reading them, and we'd love to read yours. Until next time, stay tender and saucy, my friends.
Special thanks to our sound engineer, me, and our co-host, also me. This episode of My Pleasure, the unofficial Chick-fil-A podcast, was written and produced by Allison Storm, but it was edited by me. For more information about me, visit manmadeproductions.com. That's man with two N's, madeproductions.com.